This week, we're participating in a global journalism collaboration of more than 400 news outlets called Covering Climate Now. Of course, we're also still covering the coronavirus, as we have been for months. And our next guest says those two stories intersect in so many ways. She says coronavirus is like climate change on steroids, a problem threatening lives and livelihoods that requires immediate collective action and the expertise of scientists. And just like climate change, COVID-19 has become a crisis on a scale so large that it's hard for us to comprehend what's happening. Joining us now is Emily Atkin, climate journalist and founder of the climate newsletter and podcast Heated. And Emily, let's start with some of the obvious intersections of climate change and the pandemic. Early on, there was actually some hope that COVID-19 lockdowns could cause global emissions to fall. And now, months later, what have we seen happen to climate change prevention efforts amid the pandemic?
I think anyone who pays attention to climate change knew from the beginning that the narrative that nature was healing, that this was going to help with climate change, was a bit of a misguided thought. Just because climate change is so long-term, it has always and will always require long-term emissions reduction, something we do for a few months or even a year. If we ever go back to quote-unquote normal emissions, it doesn't really make a difference. And so I think what I saw when this happened was when these emissions reductions and the nature is healing thing started, I thought, well, maybe this will give people an idea of what it looks like to have a little bit of a cleaner world. And maybe that will be inspiring. Mm. But the fact that our emissions went right back up and stayed basically the same was not surprising. It's always been clear that we've needed long-term emissions reductions.
And then I'm thinking about what climate change is showing us in real time with the wildfires in California, for instance.
Oh, God. Yeah. I mean, the way that that intersects with coronavirus is just awful. Knowing how important it is to be able to go outside and hang out with your friends, social distance, and then you can't go be outside and be with your friends because of the smoke or even because of the imminent danger. The way that these crises are intersecting is certainly troubling to me.
Let's talk a little bit more about that intersection and these parallels. So earlier this summer, we asked Kim Cobb, a climate scientist at the Georgia Institute of Technology, if she saw a connection. Here's what she said.
Well, unfortunately, the parallels for me are very stark. Climate science has been watching this train wreck happen for several decades now, and this pandemic train wreck is very similar. You're sacrificing what you think is public health and well-being for short-term economic gain, but what you are really doing is baking in long-term economic damage.
I mean, what she's saying here really makes me think about, are we so short-sighted with both climate change and the pandemic that we can't see down the line to the inevitable pain?
The short answer is yeah. I mean, it's not even that, though. We can't even see the pain that climate change is causing us right now. I mean, last year, in 2019, climate change contributed to extreme weather events that cost at least $100 billion in damages, if not more. And scientists estimate that by 2050, if we don't drastically reduce our emissions, the cumulative damages from climate change may reach $8 trillion a year. Mm. When you think about the sweeping climate change plans that have been proposed by Democrats in Congress, they rank among the trillions of dollars. But compared to the prospect of an $8 trillion loss per year, it doesn't actually seem that like that much. And those are the numbers that we're not thinking about. When people say solving climate change, these climate policies are too damaging economically, it's like, compared to what?
I want to go back to what you were saying, that it's not even that we're short-sighted on the future, but that we can't even see what's happening right now. I mean, back to that whole thing about our world healing at the start of the pandemic, people did mobilize as individuals, even before the government did. We stopped eating out. We started wearing masks. But now, you know, 6 months in, has seeing people respond to the pandemic shaped your view or changed your view on the kind of impact that individual choices have on climate?
Oh my God, so much. I mean, I still fully believe that we're not going to solve climate change unless we tackle big systemic problems. The fact that we use so much fossil fuels to power our economy, the fact that animal agriculture is so polluting, these are systemic issues, and they can't really be solved on an individual level. However, the beginning of coronavirus really made me realize how much power individuals have to change culture and to pressure governments and corporations to do what's right. If we're all doing individually what's right, and then we see the people with power not doing it, that creates pressure to create change. However, I think now, you know, you're seeing the effect of what happens when individuals make sacrifices for a really long time and then don't see commensurate change in governments and in businesses. Mm-hmm. You get downtrodden. You'd start giving up. And everything starts to fall apart.
Well, another systemic problem is racism. I mean, we see the parallels between climate change and this pandemic and how it's disproportionately impacted Black, Brown, and poorer communities. I mean, climate change is basically doing the same thing. So how does that shape our country's response to both of these crises?
Yeah, it just means that the people most affected by both of these big problems, they're the ones that have the most to lose, you know, Black and Brown communities, because of systemic racism. Those are the people that are most affected by climate change. And then they're dealing with the pandemic. That affects everything, just because those people are dealing with a lot, and they cannot adequately advocate for themselves. I think something that the pandemic has taught us all is that when you are going through so much pain and struggling, it gets hard for you to do your job, to take care of your kids, and then the last thing is to advocate for yourself, right? Mm-hmm. So it really takes the work of other people who are more privileged to push for that work on both ends, so that everyone understands that these are all interconnected issues. We're all working for the same thing, which is an equal society that's not on fire and not plagued by a pandemic.
So, you know, a counter, though, to all of this is, why talk about climate change during a pandemic? We're spending trillions of dollars as a country to get out of this crisis. Is there any bandwidth left to actually move on climate policy?
I mean, it doesn't matter what the bandwidth is, really. People might not think that we have the bandwidth, but you have to make the bandwidth for both of these things, because climate change didn't stop for the pandemic, clearly. I mean, we can't just pretend that we only have the capacity as human beings to deal with one thing at a time. Both of these crises threaten millions of lives and economies. Honestly, for me, the pandemic made climate change seem more relevant, not less relevant. And the good news is there are solutions, economic recovery solutions for the coronavirus that include climate policies, job creation, mm-hmm. economic stimulus policies. There are other countries that are doing just that. I just read about the EU proposing a plan, an economic recovery plan that included lots of green energy investment for their coronavirus recovery plan. It's possible, and it's something forward-looking. Can you imagine proposing something in Congress that actually purported to solve two problems at once, and how exciting mm-hmm. that might be?
You've said this has made you feel that this is an even more urgent problem, but do you worry that as a society, we're just going to go numb? I mean, we're getting used to seeing all of the death, to the fires and the orange skies. This has made you feel more of a call to action, but are you fearful about folks going numb?
No, not at all, honestly. I know that some people do go numb, and we have to give people time to feel numb about these things, but I don't recall any time in human history where people have just gone completely numb to tragedy. There's always been large groups of people working against injustice, whatever it is. I often argue that anger is a catalyzing emotion. For so long, we looked at climate change as something that was just our faults, because we had driven our cars too much, because we had eaten too much meat, and there was nothing that we could do about it, because of course not every individual is going to do what's necessary. So we were sad about it, and it was always presented that way in in media narratives about it. And I think, you know, the same thing happened a bit with coronavirus too, where we're like, oh man, this virus is just taking over and there's nothing we can do because people just aren't staying inside. But the more both crises go on and the more we learn about it, we realize, wait, this wasn't me. This wasn't my fault. There were failings at the highest level of power for the people that were supposed to protect us, that promised us they would protect us, that pull the levers on what happens with both of these crises. And then you realize that you actually, in a democracy, have the power to change that. So I don't fear that people will become numb. What I fear is that information will be suppressed. I fear that people will get the wrong information and they'll continue blaming themselves and continue thinking that they don't have the power to change these things. That's my fear.
Emily Atkin, founder of the climate newsletter and podcast, Heat It. Thank you so much for this conversation.
Thank you for having me, and thanks for having this conversation.